Narvaez Insurance Services brings you 40 years of combined experience to protect small businesses. As an independent brokerage, Narvaez Insurance Services selects the most appropriate coverage for the best value for any insurance need from different insurance carriers. Business liability, workers' comp, umbrella policies for maximum protection, and of course, auto, home, renter's insurance. Also offering DMV services for your title transfers and renewing registration. With Narvaez Insurance Services, you can avoid the long lines at the DMV. Contact Narvaez Insurance Services for a competitive quote by calling 707-927-3204. Give Bernie Narvaez a call at 707-927-3204.
Good morning, Napa Valley. Lee W. Miller here. Welcome to another great edition of All Things Napa. As I said, my name is Lee W. Miller, and when I am not behind this microphone, I am a full-time realtor, past president of the Napa Association of Realtors with NORBAR. I also love giving back as a member of the Vine Trail Board, and the founder of Napa Business Advantage. And you might wonder why I am on the radio. It's because I'm a serial networker. I love connecting businesses with each other and somewhat of a matchmaker, if you will, but not for love, but for love of business and helping business owners grow their business. And so I welcome an opportunity to connect with you. We can do that over lunch. And, you know, we've always heard as we were growing up that there ain't no such thing as a free lunch. Well, I'm here to prove that wrong, because if you reach out to me at leewmiller@gmail.com, I'm inviting you to lunch. So let's get to know each other and have a splash of wine and see how I might be able to help you. The reason for this show, again, is we really need to help each other as a community, and that means buy local and support local, and that's what this is all about. And because I am a full-time realtor when I'm not behind this microphone, I do a real estate minute with each show, and I have previously discussed that there are some assembly bills, 1481 and 1482, and I'm just vehemently opposed to these bills because they're rent control and there's kind of a violation of property rights, in my opinion, and most of those in the real estate community, that limits what people can do with their own property. And so I encourage you to talk to me about that, or if you already are familiar with some of the things that are going on with those two bills, reach out, contact your senators, contact your assembly members, and make sure that you voice your opinion that they vote no on those particular bills. There's also another one that's on the floor now. 1487, Assembly Bill 1487. And this is going to impose a $10 per square foot for a developer on any commercial property, theoretically, so that they can increase a fund for affordable housing. My concern with such a bill like that is that it stifles development of commercial property. And frankly, we've seen it time and time again where there is some sort of a program like this and the funds go into the designated area, but then they're somebody changes their mind. Those in leadership say, well, you know, we need those funds for something else. I think we saw that with the gas tax that the state dipped into the funds that were supposed to improve our roads and off they went into the general fund. So I've got the contact information for those. Again, reach out to me, leewmiller@gmail.com, and I'm happy to share that with you so that you can reach out to your senator and assembly member about those and let them know your opinion. And we've got some great guests in today. Ryan Nygaard is here, and Bernie Narvaez is going to be here in our second half. Before we get to Ryan, I want to share with you the little Napa nugget of the day. So here's a little story for you. In 1914, in a house on F Street, two men were hard at work trying to perfect their invention. They felt that it was ready for testing, and to do so, they agreed that one of them would go way up on the top of Montecito Boulevard above Alta Heights. And they said, at the agreed upon time, synchronized watches and all, the gentleman who remained on F Street would turn on the power and the test would begin. Most of the entire town of Napa, which was only about 6,000 people, I did the research to find out at that point, unbeknownst to them, instantly became part of this experimental test. They were in complete awe, some reporting that they thought they were hearing the audible voice of God from heaven above. What they were actually hearing was the first ever amplified voice coming from the very first ever created speaker. Those two gentlemen, along with their creation, went on to form the company called Magnavox, and it all began right here in Napa. And if you were not aware of that little Napa nugget, just about 10 feet away from Allegria Restaurant to the west, there is a statue of an old-style horn speaker, and it commemorates their invention. And that is your Napa nugget of the week. I just find that fascinating, and if you didn't see, there was an article in the Register about that several months or so ago. So, with no further ado, let me introduce our first guest, Ryan Nygaard. Welcome, Ryan.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here today.
Glad to have you. So, tell us a little bit about your background, and we'll get into your company, because, again, here we're trying to introduce the listeners to all of the guest businesses that come in here. So tell us a little bit about you and your background.
Absolutely. So my father always had a little joke, as he was a minister. He'd always tell people, our name isn't Fargard, but Nearguard. yes, that was one of his great jokes throughout many years that I've picked up on. But ultimately, since my father was a minister, we moved around a bunch. So I was born in Madison, Wisconsin. We moved to Iowa, New Mexico, Minnesota, New Jersey, Texas, Arkansas, Spain, back to Texas. And when I came to California, I just felt like home. It's after you've seen enough of the world, you kind of know when something clicks, and Napa just absolutely clicked for me. So I'm not a Napa native, but I've been here now for 19 years, and I feel about as native as can be. So I had to move around a bunch as a child, which I hated drastically, as you can imagine. But the great thing as an adult, and especially being in business development for my company, I never meet a stranger now.
Exactly. So did you have trouble acclimating to the new schools and things of that nature, or did that help you bust out of that and never met a stranger and be more extroverted?
Well, it helps when your father's the pastor, because everybody kind of wants to get to know you, so it kind of forces you to come out of your shell. My mom was also the teacher, which I think I forgot to tell you too. So, they had a close eye on everything we're doing. But I would definitely say that all those things combined definitely helped in making sure that I didn't have a shell that I stayed inside of.
Right. Well, that set you up for a career in sales potentially, right?
Yeah. Well, I think one of the funniest things is when you go experience all the different weathers. Like Texas is humid. You walk outside and you're sweating as soon as you leave the door. You know, Minnesota, when the sun goes down, you know, mosquitoes will eat you alive.
Right.
You know, in New Jersey, you'd have the giant nor'easters that roll in the winter and you know, get you stuck in your house for days at a time. So, I mean, of all those places, California, to be able to choose the weather you want to drive to within an hour or two is absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah. We're going to have the Chamber of Commerce cut you a check for that. That was beautiful.
Travis, if you're listening, I will be happily take one.
All right. So describe your occupation for our listeners, Ryan.
Yeah. I'm actually an owner of two different businesses in the downtown Napa area. One of them is called Fly With Wine, which is a hard shell suitcase company. You may have seen at about 250 different wineries now. It helps people travel on the airlines with wine very easily. You can check the suitcase right onto the airplane with Alaska Airlines. It qualifies for wine flies free. For Southwest Airlines, you can check it on for free as well. So it's a great way to save on shipping costs. From a winery standpoint, it's a great way to sell more wine. You can incentivize people to, you know, purchase more wine by, you know, purchase a certain amount of wine or join my wine club and we'll discount the suitcase. There's just a lot of different use cases that show it's helping wineries sell more wine. But today I'm actually here to talk with you more about Astra Digital, because I'm the director of business development and one of the owners for both the companies. But my role ultimately is to kind of educate people when it comes to the digital marketing side, because in general, you know, wineries are a little bit behind the ball. And I don't mean this in a derogatory way. It's just wineries are behind the ball in a certain sense when it comes to digital marketing. You know,
or marketing in general.
Exactly. Marketing in general. A lot of times you have people that have a passion for farming, you know, people that understand that it's an investment to grow grapes for 8 years. It's an investment to pay $1 million for fermentation tanks. It's an investment to spend millions of dollars on a tasting room. But to spend
none of which they ever have a problem with.
Exactly.
They'll spend that money left and right. But when it comes to marketing, they've got a magnum in the tasting room with a clipboard that says, guess how many corks are in here, and we'll send you whatever, you know. That's old time, old school marketing right there.
Well, it's kind of the old sense of if you build it, they will come. And nowadays, I think with the amount of competition that's happening, and not even just in Napa, I mean, competition exists in other wine countries as well. I think one of the tragedies I think that's happened because a result of the fire is that other people have been forced to explore the wine region. So they've discovered Willamette Valley. They've discovered Woodinville Wine Country up in Washington. They've rediscovered Paso Robles, and they found out that they're producing some world quality wines as well. And so I think from a local standpoint, I think that it's more important now more than ever to really be investing in digital marketing and making sure that you're engaging with your fans and reminding them why they fell in love with you. Because, you know, without that connection, you know, people's loyalty goes to, you know, where they get the most bang for their buck.
And I recently heard there are 500 brick and mortar wineries just in Napa County and 1,100 brands. That's a lot of competition.
Yeah. I mean, not to mention the online digital brands that are fighting as well. I mean, all they have is digital marketing. So to a certain extent, you're falling behind on multiple levels on that.
Absolutely. So did you all always know that this is where you were going to land? And not geographically. I understand that was a learning process. But in terms of this business,
yeah, no, to say that I knew I was going to work in the digital marketing arena, especially in wine, would be the last thing from my mind. It's like I mentioned, my father was a minister.
Not to mention it didn't exist 20 years ago. So.
Exactly. That it didn't. But, you know, my father always trained me when I was a kid. He would tell me, he had me trained that when people ask me what I want to be when I grow up, I'd say, I want to be a pastor just like my dad.
Right.
You know? And so after about age 9 or 10, I realized that, you know, I probably want to go another direction. But, you know, my house, we weren't raised with wine. So when I moved out to Napa, I honestly didn't know the difference between a Cabernet Sauvignon and a Sauvignon Blanc. But, you know, that's kind of one of the best things about food and wine is that as you fall in love with that, you know, you reach this whole new depth. So, you know, now I'm a certified sommelier. I work through, you know, a number of the restaurants while I went through school, you know, including, you know, Auberge du Soleil. I worked at the Michelin star restaurant at Domaine Chandon at Troyes. I worked for Ken Frank at Le Toque. I worked at a number of different places that gave me a great perspective on the riches that Napa has, which is, you know, this beautiful aspect on culinary and wine pairing sensation. I mean, you know, it's hard hard not to love. And I mean, I took it to another level. I married a winemaker. Oh. So she's actually on the winemaking team up at Dolivali. She's their cellar master, but she's originally from France. And so we both share the same passions, which is great.
That's great. And you can help market her wines.
Well, she doesn't have her wines yet.
Oh, okay.
You know, and Dolivali is a great elite brand. So she's learning a lot of things being on that team and having a great time. But ultimately, I think, yeah, one day, hopefully, I will be helping her market her wines, too.
Wonderful. So, you know, every business has a wonderful success, and everyone can tell a story, usually, about a big failure. What's one of the bigger success stories that you can tell us about?
Yeah, I mean, I love talking about successes, and I think in this instance, I think this is a perfect example of a lot of wineries that are stuck in a certain frame, a mindset of marketing, say, only with, you know, in this example, let me take a step back. In this example, the winery I'm talking about is in Mendocino. They have had a promotional program to their club members and to their list for nearly a decade that they only promoted with postcards and traditional methods, you know, some phone call outreach. And they were a little timid to step into the digital marketing arena, and the promotion generally lasts for a 3-day period of time, and it's a throwback to celebrate the repeal of prohibition. So what they do is they have a extremely discounted case point purchasing on their wine, and we help them take that into the digital front, and we help them sell almost $500,000 of wine in a little more than a 3-day period of time.
Wow.
And for a small, you know, family winery that literally has, you know, the father, the mother, and their two sons, you know, I mean, I think one other hired hand. I mean, that's a significant impact
huge.
On their business.
You probably cleared everything out, and they have nothing left to sell.
Well, I can't get into the specific details about it, but I would definitely say we help make a dramatic impact, and they're just wonderful people. So to me, I think that's the real beauty of doing the work we're doing, is that although I didn't end up being a minister, there's some aspects of helping your local community that's very similar. Like when my father used to go make visits in the hospital and see sick people. I mean, a lot of times when you take a business that doesn't have the ability to do this for themselves, and you build that ecosystem for them to have success in the digital front, it's really rewarding. I mean, I'm excited to get up in the morning, you know. So I feel like I jump out of bed and scare the dog sometimes. But
yeah. You know, it's funny with the minister reference. I've in my corporate days before moving to Napa, I always explained what I did was I evangelized new technology.
I love that.
And because what I was doing was such cutting edge, bleeding edge, we used to refer to it, of telecommunications technology, you know, when a voicemail system cost $100,000 and was the size of a car,
yeah,
you know, that needed to be evangelized because it never had been around before.
Yeah.
Now, of course, it's everywhere. So, well, from an evangelizing of technology and marketing, you're kind of, there's a similarity there.
I couldn't agree more. And I think one of the, you know, it's kind of continuing on that line of success is I think our company's had, we've been in business now for 3 years. We actually just started our fourth year 2 weeks ago.
So congratulations. Happy anniversary.
Thank you very much. It's funny how time flies.
Yeah.
You know, so, but we just, we won the contract in July for for DUNAPA, the
okay.
Downtown Napa Association that is represented by the TID, the Tourist Improvement District of Napa. So it has city funding money that goes to the improvement and the marketing of getting, you know, people to come visit our great, you know, city that really should be, you know, brought to the spotlight. So it's really fun to see all the hard work that you put into it. And, you know, the local team that we have of like 23 people, of those 23 people, 20 people live within walking distance of downtown Napa. So, you know, we live and we breathe, you know, the essence of it. And so it's a real honor to be able to do that. And we take it very seriously. So
that's great. And that makes you a perfect guest for this show, because you're promoting Napa and I'm promoting Napa and the local aspect of it on this show. So, all right, let's talk about one of those failures, because every business does have a failure, and it's okay to have a disaster or a failure. It's how we respond to it that matters, not the fact that, oh, no, I've never had any of those. I'm perfect. Mm-hmm. So can you share one of those with us?
In the realm of how many decisions you make inside of being a digital marketing agency on a daily basis, I probably have more mistakes that we've made than I could probably count. I could take up the entire show telling you about them, but I say a good example of probably mistake is one time we had a client that had a fairly significant budget, and this was early on, and we ended up spending almost 10 times the budget because it was simply set up incorrectly. There's things like that that happen on a regular basis, but ultimately I think the most important part of it is the iterative learning that you get. So sometimes things are more of an expensive learning curve, like one was, which we had, we ate the expense on. And then there's other times when it's really just more of what's the moral lesson you can gain from it. But our company actually, we're built in a structure to learn from our mistakes like that. So we have something that we call a retrospective that we do every Friday at 4 p.m. where we sit down with our team members and we open wine. So since we have a number of winery clients on both sides of the business, we stock our refrigerators with hundreds of bottles of wine from different regions. So we have wines. We have companies in France we represent. We represent the wines of Portugal, a third of the regions of the wine in Portugal, which is the wines of Alentejo. We represent the American branding for them, so we have some of those wine. We visit Washington on a regular basis, so we have Walla Walla wines, we have Woodinville wines, we have Willamette Valley wines. We have wines from all across the West Coast. So we sit down and we say, what are the things that we did well this week as we sip on the wines from the different regions? So we learn about the wine, we talk about our successes, and then we flip it on its head and say, what's something that we messed up on this week that we could do better? So we bring the collective knowledge of the team together so that the rising tide can raise all ships. So that's really our mentality. So, we're not afraid to say that we make mistakes, but we definitely learn from them.
And what a perfect way to multitask. You're learning about the wine and doing the drill down, on what you did right and what you did wrong.
We haven't had any complaints from any of our team yet. So.
Right. I wouldn't hold your breath for any complaints coming in. So what's something like, what are the biggest challenges in your industry?
I would say as far as challenges, I'd say that on an average, we really have to educate on a regular basis. So I'd say when it comes to challenges, let me break it down even more. I'd say there's probably two main challenges, and they actually kind of piggyback on each other. One of them is staffing. Napa is at a 29-year low as far as unemployment rate. So it's a very competitive job market. And so sometimes people that may not have all the skills that you need are able to fill a position.
29-year low? I'm not sure where you got that stat. I totally believe it. As a matter of fact, I just read that we are at a 50-year low for the state of California for mm-hmm. unemployment.
I think Napa maintains a fairly low unemployment rate. And I read in Wine Business Monthly, I think it was probably about 4 or 5 weeks ago. Okay. That's where I got that quote from. The number may have changed.
Either one, 50 or 29.
It's both great numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
But the point is, nonetheless, is that, you have people out there that are filling jobs that maybe they don't have the ability to do. Maybe they want to grow into it.
Right.
And a lot of times, I think that wineries, a lot of businesses, even outside of wineries, they can bring someone on board that they don't even necessarily know how to mentor.
Right.
So if you bring someone on to perform a specific skill set and you don't know how to mentor them, how do you actually help them grow? So that goes hand in hand with the idea that if you have someone that can't necessarily grow in your organization, it just makes sense that our industry has morphed into this scenario that to have another job improvement, you have to move to the next winery. So you see people jumping jobs every one or two different years.
Right.
So from that standpoint, wineries are lacking continuity in their marketing. They're lacking the skilled professionals to come in and handle these jobs. So the reason why we really approached it that way, why we've approached our business this way from an educational standpoint, because my business partner is also an instructor at Sonoma State University, we've really approached it from a standpoint of educating the wineries on incremental growth and then we can fit in whatever way that the wineries need us to fit in. So do you need us just for email, social media, and a few digital ads? We can do that. You need us for full table setting marketing? We can absolutely do that as well. So we're built to be a turnkey solution for the wineries based off the needs they have. So we can fit in with a large, you know, some of the larger brands that you would expect, and you know, ma and pa brand as well.
Perfect. If you're just joining us, the voice you're hearing besides mine is Ryan Neergaard with Astra Digital Marketing. That's the key word there, is digital. And Ryan, share with our listeners how they can get in touch with you.
Yeah, so we are a local business. We're located on 1830 Soskal Avenue, Suite C, in the business park. And you can get in touch with me by email at ryan@astradms.com. That's ryan@astradms.com. And we can check us out on our website, check out some of our team at astradigital.com.
Ryan, it was a pleasure having you on. Continued success to you, and we'll see you around town.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
All right.
Narvaez Insurance Services brings you 40 years of combined experience to protect small businesses. As an independent brokerage, Narvaez Insurance Services selects the most appropriate coverage for the best value for any insurance need from different insurance carriers. Business liability, workers' comp, umbrella policies for maximum protection, and of course, auto, home, renter's insurance. Also offering DMV services for your title transfers and renewing registration. With Narvaez Insurance Services, you can avoid the long lines at the DMV. Contact Narvaez Insurance Services for a competitive quote by calling 707-927-3204. Give Bernie Narvaez a call at 707-927-3204.
Okay, welcome back to All Things Napa. That was pretty interesting listening to a well-spoken Ryan Neergaard all about digital marketing. And man, that time flew. We exceeded our interview time, but we got a lot in that time frame simply because Ryan talked very quickly and was chock full of information. So it is time for the listing of the week. And the listing of the week is typically a property that's either brand new to the market or one that's been sitting on the market for a while and just maybe had a price reduction or something of that nature. This one is a brand new listing, and it's a beautiful 2-bedroom, 1.5-bath condominium located in North Napa. This unit is move-in ready with a new kitchen countertops, backsplash, newer energy-efficient windows, sliding glass door, parquet floors, new water heater, just new, all kinds of stuff. New toilets even, new crown molding. And only a few of these units have an open floor plan downstairs, and this is one of those units. So both front and back patios for relaxing and entertaining. The patio has a beautiful shade tree that also shades the master bedroom upstairs, and lots of storage. That's kind of one of the issues with a condo, is sometimes they don't have enough storage. And all freshly painted, ready for you to move in. And this development also includes a community pool and clubhouse. If you are interested, or maybe you know somebody who's interested in this possibility, have them reach out to me, LeeWMiller@gmail.com, or just give me a call or a text at 707-266-1585. Before we get to Bernie Narvaez, I like to plug some activities that are upcoming, because my favorite activities, Blues Brews and Barbecue, that was a great fun time. The Safeway Open's coming up, and of course my all-time favorite is the Napa Valley Film Festival. The Safeway Open is the 26th through the 29th, and the Film Festival of September. And the Film Festival is November 13th through 17th. So but I also want to plug a golf tournament coming up, Friends of Napa County Animal Shelter, September 13th at Vintner's. I'm playing in that golf tournament. And on October 8th, we as in Napa Business Advantage, the premier business referral group of Napa Valley. What makes us a little bit different is we have mixers probably two or three times a year where we raise money for a local nonprofit. And on October 8th at Gabrielle Collection, it's a free event. You might want to come down and mix and mingle with some other business people, have some wine, some popcorn, and see what we're doing at Napa Business Advantage. And of course, there's also on that day, October 8th, a golf tournament at Napa Valley Country Club that raises money for veterans of foreign wars. Can't be in two places at one time. So whichever your pleasure is, if you'd like to golf and leave early and come to our mixer, that would be great as well. So it is time to bring on my buddy, my pal, and a member of Napa Business Advantage, Bernie Narvaez.
Good morning, Lee.
Good morning.
Happy to be back.
Yes, and as you probably heard, listeners, Bernie is a sponsor of our show. That's why you'll hear his commercials three times during this hour of All Things Napa. So Bernie has always been very active in the community, and he's a local business owner of Narvaez Insurance Services. And as an active member, he's really aware of a lot of things that are going on. And I kind of pride myself on being an active participant in community affairs, and yet Bernie makes me seem like I'm an outsider compared to he just knows everything about what's going on. And Bernie's also a member of the GPAC for the general plan. So let's get a little update from Bernie on what's going on with the GPAC.
Yes, Lee. So first of all, I just want to tell the listeners, if they don't know what that is, it's a 20-year plan for Napa. So the state has, you know, the state tells the cities you have to have a plan for 20 years. So this one goes from 2020 to 2040. It's a two-year process. It's a 15-member committee. So we basically have public meetings. We talk to the staff, the consultant, and the community to make sure that, hey, the next 20 years, because we can't predict the future, but with, you know, good community feedback, we can do the best that we can to make sure that we're prepared for the next 20 years.
And that is such a valuable tool for the community. I don't think there's a whole lot of communities that do that. And the committee consists of 40 different members, right? All diverse?
It's 15 of us. And it's very diverse. We have people from nonprofits to...
Oh, there's only 15?
15 of us, yes.
Oh. Well, I don't know where I got the number 40, but...
It looks like there's 40 of us because we're doing a lot of work out there. I mean, we have staff and we have, we have the consultant, so it looks like it's a big team, you know, but we're all very involved. We have a lot of energy, willing to tackle these issues. And, you know, the community has done well in coming and talking to us, both us being proactive, and then, hey, let's make sure we don't miss this element. So there's several elements that's required, and then we can add elements, you know, depending on our community.
And are these, if someone locally here is not on the committee, are these meetings open to the general public?
Yes, it's we go according to a Brown Act. So these are public, transparent meetings.
Okay. The reason I asked that is because I was now going to ask you, what are some of the more unusual suggestions that have come from the committee or from the community to the committee that might, I don't know, you know, be a head scratcher or something that it's like, well, I don't know if we're going to be able to do that. Are there things like that, or is everything pretty much suggestions that one might expect?
Well, I don't know about unusual, but I think that one of the common questions is, you know, how specific can we get in a general plan? So when people come up to us, they want to talk about certain projects that we won't deal with in the general plan because we're more about, you know, the big picture.
Right.
So, but then I would say, how does that fit in the big picture? Is this something that will fit with the general guidance of the general plan? Because remember, this has to go to the Planning Commission, and it has to go to the City Council for their approval.
Right. So somebody says, I need a stop sign at this intersection. That's not what you guys are doing.
Exactly. But we can talk about walkability, safety, and how that fits in the broader picture.
Right. For instance, the Vine Trail.
The Vine Trail, crosswalks, you know, how traffic, you know, is... timed and coordinated in different periods and how the flow is going to work. You know, as technology changes in the future, how do we address that now and looking in the next 20 years when we don't know exactly how technology is going to affect our community?
Right. Obviously, housing is probably a big part of that. Have you solved the housing issue yet? You guys have had, you know, the committee's been formed for 6-7 months now, right?
Right. Our first meeting was in January, so okay. I would love to answer that with a big yes.
Great. Hey, you know, everybody. Did you hear what Bernie just said?
No, I wish. it's a challenge that we'll always be facing because right. We live in a place that it's such a great place to live.
Yeah.
You know, for all levels. We just had a meeting last week about land use. And we did an exercise where we think, you know, areas that will be good potential housing sites. You know, we talked about, you know, our chair, Chuck Chairman, talked about the golf course, you know, hopefully dividing that up. You know, none of this is in stone. Remember, we're just exploring, we're discussing, we're recommending. The Planning Commission is going to take it on, and then the City Council can say, you know what, we like how it's presented, or we want to make changes. Right. So we don't want to just ignore things. We want to discuss it, put things on the table, and say, you know what, this doesn't apply anymore. But at least we talk about it.
Right. And I think it's probably pretty clear also that your role isn't one that you get to make these decisions, but you get to collect all of the ideas, weigh the pros and cons, and make recommendations. But it's still the City Council and the Planning Commission that ultimately are going to decide these things. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
And one thing I wanted to add, because we, you know, Ryan talked about unemployment rate being so low, and you know, one of the things that we look at other cities, how what they've done, what programs they have in place. One of the things I saw from Austin, Texas, is they have a really good workforce program that identifies, you know, different levels of different economic levels and their respective jobs. And, you know, so basically it's this: how many people are living under poverty. These are the opportunities to move them up to the middle skill job and then upward. So it's really good for when a business wants to come into Napa to kind of look at what is the labor profile of Napa and how does my business plug into that. Can we come in and is it labor ready? Do we have enough workforce? What kind of skill level? Which I think would be a great thing to add. There are different agencies, I think, that do that, but I think we create something a little more cohesive. So when we have a good employer that wants to come in, they can see a better picture and have a greater chance of bringing that employer with high-paid jobs.
Right. If you're just joining us, this is All Things Napa. I'm Lee W. Miller, and my guest right now is Bernie Narvaez. Narvaez Insurance Services, but also a very active member of the community and a member of GPAC. One of the things that we always see happen is every time somebody has a suggestion, hey, why don't we do X, it seems just 100%. There's always an opposition for some reason, and it's usually somewhat of a NIMBY, not in my backyard reason. Have you guys talked about the old Sonoma Road, Health and Human Services, and things of that nature? I mean, that's been an ongoing debate ever since the earthquake as to what to do with that property. Is it housing? Is it historical? Is it this? Is it that?
Well, the Napa County just sold it. And from what I understand, they sold it with the caveat of having it be housing. So now it's going to go to, I believe it's a nonprofit developer. Maybe I could be wrong there. But now it's going to be in the city's hands to approve it and go through that permit process. So it's no longer in Napa County's hands. So we haven't discussed that specifically, but there is an understanding that that is a location for housing.
That's great. That's great. And you say a nonprofit developer, does that translate into quote unquote affordable housing?
You know, I'm going to back up a little bit because I think I read it was nonprofit, but I could be wrong.
Okay.
So don't quote
caveat
me.
Caveat there. Yeah. It may or may not be.
I don't think it is.
He's really well connected in the community, but he can't know everything. So don't hold him to the nonprofit aspect of that.
Yeah.
Did we cover that?
Yeah, thank you. Sometimes I do get ahead of myself a little bit. That's okay. We all make mistakes.
Oh, absolutely. Ryan and I were just talking about that. It's how you recover from them. And I think we just recovered pretty well from
kinda
that
laugh it
one.
Up a little bit. Make fun of yourself.
And it may
and
not
move
even
on.
Be a mistake. That's the cool part. But we're still covered.
There you go.
So what are some of the other things that you guys have been talking about?
So there are a few things. Climate is really important. We're talking about how, you know, transportation affects our climate, the air, you know, the carbon footprint. How are we going to build more housing and what that means for climate? You know, our trees in our city, you know, that's a really important element to a healthy environment. So how do we continue to fight the housing crisis and also mitigate some of the climate, you know, some of the climate effects that could cause? So having a health in all policies is one of the phrases that we discuss is how do we have
What do you call it?
Health in all policies is something that we're still discussing, meaning do we have in each element a policy that will consider health of the of our community.
Okay.
So we can have in one big element or we can have embedded within each element. So as City Council discusses a project, there's a part in there that says health. How does this affect health? Is it relevant? Is it not relevant? Do we need to look at something further than we haven't done before?
Right. As well as, of course, quality of life and things of that nature. Parking, have you tackled that one yet?
We haven't necessarily talked about parking. We're still almost to the midpoint of the process. We just talked about alternatives to the general plan, and we discussed land use.
Okay.
But we'll be talking about that kind of stuff later on. Parking is going to be a hard one to tackle, I think, because, you know, with technology and vehicles, what is the behavior of our you know, not just the tourists, but our workforce? Are they going to continue to be a single, you know, occupancy vehicle driver, or are we going to be able to build where people can walk to work or bike or ride a scooter? I mean, we talked about walkability, and a lot of that has to do with transportation behavior. If people are driving more and we build a nice walkability plan and connectivity, is that enough to encourage them from getting out of their vehicle and walking to work or biking to work? Or if you add scooters, is that even something that they may consider?
Right.
You know, so it could be a big hit and miss.
Right.
You know, so those are things that we're still in discussion.
So if you take long enough to resolve this, the problem will go away because self-driving cars will be ubiquitous, and then we don't need parking.
Well, I mean, that's one idea. I know that, you know,
it might take 20 or 30 years, but, you know.
I read an article, it was last year, that the major alcohol companies, you know, are now advocating for self-driving vehicles because to them, that means that people aren't, you know, not drinking because they're driving.
Right.
Now that one or two more drinks, that equates to them billions of dollars in profits.
And, you know, that's interesting. I hadn't heard of that one, but I had heard that one of the reasons that Google is such an advocate of self-driving vehicles is because if you think about all the hours and hours and hours that we're behind the wheel and we can't be online, you take that element away and all of the drivers are now online more, and just the advertising revenue alone from that. It's really interesting to see from the business enterprise what their motivation might be versus ours is just, you know, safety or to feed our laziness of not having to drive or what have you. So
I mean, that's 1 hour more a day or 2 hours for some people.
Right.
online looking at ads and purchasing.
It's about three
things.
Minutes for me, but
3 minutes for you. Yeah. But you know, people that for the larger, you know, region, you know, drivers from, you know, from smaller cities to San Francisco or Oakland or the major, you know, job hubs.
Yeah. All right. So parking's not going to be resolved in the next meeting.
No.
Do you guys weigh in on the whole Civic Center or whatever? They changed the name of it now. They're not referring to it as the new Civic Center. Is that correct?
Right. So they restarted the process. They're looking at different sites, and they narrowed it down, and now they're going to continue to discuss that.
Okay.
So it's not part of the general plan because it's an ongoing process with City Council. That's a very specific project that we're not going to look into. I mean, we're looking at the next 20 years. This project is going to be hopefully built, you know, in the early stages of the 20 years. So we're looking more on policy, the general idea, the general direction of where city is going to go as we continue to either grow, develop, or just, you know, live our daily lives.
All right. So I know that both of us are very involved in philanthropic activities. Hands Across America, or Hands Across the Valley. Talk about that.
Well, you know, I was a guest there last Saturday. George Altamura and his team put it together to feed our community. It's their goal is to fight to end hunger. And, you know, it was a really nice, you know, event. Not sure how long it's been going on, but it's been going on for a while.
Right.
And they, you know, the proceeds go to these locations like the table, Meals on Wheels, and the food bank, and they do really great work. I mean, and people there were spending some money.
That's
good.
I
think I saw a Slash guitar for a few $1,000. I think I want to say Billy Joel guitar that went for like $9,000.
Billy Joel guitar.
Was it Billy Joel? Well, somebody
easier to sell a guitar than a piano.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe it wasn't Billy Joel, but it was a famous artist, you know. And there was a lot of stuff that, you know, we had to take off a little early, but they raised quite a bit of money. We don't know the number yet, but
okay,
it was a nice event.
Well, you can share that with us on a future visit.
Yes, sir.
Bernie Narvaez is with us. Speaking of hunger, so I live downtown, and I was driving north on Franklin past the Salvation Army, and there's that apartment complex right across the street. And I saw, this was just yesterday, I saw a homeless person raiding the tomato plant and pulling off all the tomatoes and filling his shirt with those. And as a novice gardener with tomato plants and things, I was like, oh man, dude, that's just not right. So I stuck my nose in it. I stopped. I rolled my window down. I said, excuse me, do you have permission to be taking those tomatoes? And his first reaction was he screamed because I startled him. And I was really being nice, and I wasn't trying to, I was just trying to disrupt his activity so he would stop before all of the tomatoes were gone. So after he screamed, he goes, no, I'm sorry. I was just really hungry. And I said, no, dude, I understand. That's okay that you're hungry, and I'm sorry that you're hungry, but just because you're hungry doesn't mean that you can't, that you don't need to show mutual respect for your neighbor. And it's not right that you're taking those tomatoes. And his reply was, oh, sorry, man. Well, but they suck anyway. They don't taste very good. And he threw one down. It was green. So that made me then realize, okay, this isn't just a homeless person who's hungry. It's a mental illness issue as well. So I bring that story up, kind of tie in with the hunger, but also what can you tell us about the homeless issue here and the increased number of people who are living on the river and things of that nature? Have you guys talked about that?
We haven't talked about that, but I did do a ride-along recently in the evening.
Oh, I saw that, yeah.
We do have a significant homeless population, and does have a lot to do with mental health illness, unfortunately. You know, it's not just somebody's down on their luck, you know, and need to find the next job. you know, and got kicked out because of rent. These are a, you know, part of our community that has some serious issues. And, you know, a lot of them, you know, are living by the creeks, are living in tents and remote areas of our community where you can't really see that.
Right.
You know, what you see around town may just be a small portion of what is really going on.
Right.
And unfortunately, you know, it is mental health illness, and those are challenges that's not just our city is facing, but, you know, the whole state, you know, across the U.S.
Right.
You know, and it's going to be something that's going to take a while to tackle.
Yeah, and I know that a lot of our homeless population doesn't want to live in a home. They don't want shelter. They prefer to be out there, and that makes it even more difficult. If it was they were lining up and saying, yes, I will absolutely accept your gift of a roof over my head and a hot shower every day and the opportunity to reintegrate into the community, that would be wonderful. But most of the ones that I've spoken to, and including Gail, who she seems to have disappeared. A lot of people know who Gail was, and she was always at the Napa City Nights dancing with everybody else. And that makes it all the more difficult if they just don't want any change. They're completely happy in their current situation.
Yeah, I mean, one of the feedbacks I got from the police officers, some of them just want to be left alone to either have their beer or whatever. If they're, you know, using substance, they just want to, you know, be private, even right. if it is in a little tent, you know, a remote area of Napa. You know, a lot of us have big hearts. We want to help. It's hard to help somebody that
doesn't want to help.
Either doesn't want to or not mentally capable of really receiving that help. And going through the casework that takes for somebody to go from that location to being housed and then being taking the responsibility of, you know, bills and job and all that. I mean, it's a very far-fetched idea for them because they're just not in the state of mind.
Right, right. See, every single one of these topics that we're covering are very difficult. There's just so many different nuances and associated with them. I know that it was about a year or so ago I was talking to Mayor Jill, and she said that there was 298 homeless people. And I was really impressed with that because we as a community and she as the mayor knew who they all were. And
that is impressive.
Yeah. And like I say, that was probably a couple of years ago. I'm thinking that there's more than that now, but I don't have anything to base that on.
The last number I heard was around 100.
Oh, okay. But well, that's either a vast improvement or my recollection of what Jill told me is completely off. Or
it could be Napa County numbers.
Oh, okay.
The one I got was city of Napa numbers.
Okay.
So I don't know. That's just the latest number I heard.
Yeah, that sounds like a good explanation because I've a number of times I've volunteered at the table and made the meals and served the meals, and I don't think there's more than 100 people maximum that come through there. Not that everyone is going to come to the table every single time that needs a meal.
So. You know, and that reminds me when we come across somebody in that situation, you know, grabbing tomatoes off somebody's property. It's an opportunity for us to remind them of the resources that they have.
Right.
And if we don't know, it's important for us to know. So, hey, you know, when you could tell them, hey, you know, the table serves a meal at such and such time.
Right.
You know, make sure you get there and get a hot plate.
Right.
So that way, you know, that's a little contribution, trying to make a little dent in this very serious problem.
Right. All right, Bernie, we only have about 2 minutes left. Should we tackle the closing schools issue?
Well, actually, I wanted to bring up the 9/11 memorial service that is going to take place Wednesday on September 11th at 4 p.m. This year marks the 18th year since those devastating attacks, which a lot of people, heroes and victims, passed.
Right.
And I think, you know, if you think about, you know, the people that are now adults weren't there or you know, some of them were barely born, some of them didn't even exist.
Right.
So it's important for us to pass that that message and let them know what occurred so it's not forgotten.
Absolutely. And that 9/11 memorial service is at 4 p.m. on September 11th, downtown, where?
Downtown the Memorial Garden. That's on Main Street in front of Blue Note and between Blue Note and Kohl's retail store.
Wouldn't it be great if there were hundreds and hundreds of people that came out to show their respect and memorialize to the point where maybe we had to close down Main Street?
That would be great to have that level of support.
Do you know what the program is going to consist of?
Yes. So we have a local artist that's going to sing, Genevieve Connolly, of Studio G. We have our chief of police, Plummer, is going to talk and salute to the heroes. And then Josh Friday is our keynote speaker. He used to be the mayor of Novato. He's a Navy veteran and also got promoted by Gavin Newsom, Governor Newsom, as a chief service officer.
Wonderful. Well, I will definitely be there. I encourage all of our listeners to be there. And I also wanted to plug this Saturday is Napa Airport Day. So it's open to all family activities. There's kids activities. And so between 11 and 3 o'clock on this Saturday, September 7th, go on out to the airport and see the airplanes. The airport is a really important aspect of our community, and it belongs to all of the community, so we encourage you to go out there. That is going to wrap it up for All Things Napa today. I'm Lee W. Miller. Thank you for joining us, and we will talk to you next week. Take care. Oh, most important, remember, live your life like your legacy matters, because it does. Take care.
Narvaez Insurance Services brings you 40 years of combined experience to protect small businesses.
Napa.
As an independent brokerage, Narvaez Insurance Services selects the most appropriate coverage for the best value for any insurance need from different insurance carriers. Business liability, workers' comp, umbrella policies for maximum protection, and of course, auto, home, renter's insurance. Also offering DMV services for your title transfers and renewing registration. With Narvaez Insurance Services, you can avoid the long lines at the DMV. Contact Narvaez Insurance Services for a competitive quote by calling 707-927-3204. Give Bernie Narvaez a call at 707-927-3204.